Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vadhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vadhari. Yashoda Nandana Rajajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Rajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vadhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vadhari. Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Puri Vraja Kacharja Arshtotra Shatishishimad. His Divine Grace Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaura Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 7, text 12. It's a very long, complicated Sanskrit with no obvious meter. So I will just try to read it as best I can. Unless someone knows the meter for this. Taitam avirata purusha paricharyaya bhagavati pravardhamana nuraga bhara drutak pridaya satilya parhasya veganatmani udbhidyamana roma pulaka kulaka outkantya pravita pranaya vaspa nirudhavaloka nayana evam nija ramanaruna Charanara Vindanudhyana Parichita Bhakti Yogena Paripluta Paramahalada Kambira Hridaya Hridavagada Dishanastam Api Kriyamanam Bhagavat Saparyam Nasasmara Taya. By that, itam, in this manner, avirata, constant, purusha, of the Supreme Lord, paricharyaya, by service, bhagavati, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, pravardhamana, constantly increasing, anuraga, of attachment, bhara, by the load, druta, melted, hridaya, heart, shaitilya, laxity, praharsha vegina, by the force of transcendental ecstasy, atmani, in his body, Udbhidyamana Roma Pulaka Kulakaha. Standing of the hair on end. Outkantya. Because of intense longing. Pravritta. Produced. Pranaya Bhaspa Niruda Avaloka Nayanaha. Awakening of tears of love in the eyes, obstructing the vision, evam, thus, nija ramana aruna charna aravinda, on the Lord's reddish lotus feet, anudhyana, by meditating, parichita, increased, bhakti yogena, by dint of devotional service, paripluta, spreading everywhere, parama, highest, ahlada, of spiritual bliss, gambhira, very deep, hridaya hrada, in the heart, which is compared to a lake, avagadha, immersed, dishanaha, whose intelligence, tam, that, api, although, kriyamanam, executing, bhagavat, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, saparyam, the worship, na, not, sasmara, remembered. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. That most exalted devotee, Maharaj Bharat, In this way, engaged constantly in the devotional service of the Lord, naturally his love for Vasudev, Krishna, increased more and more and melted his heart. Consequently, he gradually lost all attachment for regulative duties. The hairs of his body stood on end and all the ecstatic bodily symptoms were manifest. Tears flowed from his eyes, so much so that he could not see anything. Thus he constantly meditated on the reddish lotus feet of the Lord. At that time his heart, which was like a lake, was filled with the water of ecstatic love. When his mind was immersed in that lake, he even forgot the regulative service to the Lord. Purport: when one is actually advanced in ecstatic love for Krishna, 8 transcendental blissful symptoms are manifest in the body. Those are the symptoms of perfection arising from loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since Maharaj Bharat was constantly engaged in devotional service, all the symptoms of ecstatic love were manifest in his body. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jnananjala Shalakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. It is described by Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that there are Ashta Sattvika Vikara. Ashta means 8. Sattvika means of pure devotees, and Vikara means transformation. So these are 8 transcendental bodily symptoms that pure devotees routinely experience. Rupa Goswami describes them, such as standing of hairs on the end, tears falling from the eyes, quivering of the body, Romanchakam Ashu Taranga Bhajo. This is actually natural. It's natural for the soul. When the soul is actually reinstated in his original loving service to Krishna, it's natural to experience ecstasy. Indeed, the soul is characterized by 3 major characteristics: Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat means immutable, indestructible. It cannot be altered. And Chit means conscious, full of knowledge or conscious. And Ananda means ecstasy. And this is just what you get naturally if you're a spirit soul. It comes along naturally with being a spirit soul. Only if you artificially cover yourself with material consciousness, false ego, and desire to imitate God, do you lose this. We're actually supposed to be experiencing ecstasy 24 hours a day. If we're not experiencing the higher taste, it means we're being cheated by our mind. We have allowed our mind to royally cheat us. The king of cheats is the material mind. So as we advance systematically in devotional service, this feeling of happiness becomes a natural, steady nature of the heart. One naturally feels inspired in devotional service. There is some struggle initially, but once you get over the struggle stage, then what devotional service is always happy. Narottam Das Thakur describes devotional service as Kevala Ananda Kanda. That means simply the blissful path. And if we're not in that condition, then we should meditate at least on the peak experiences that we occasionally get by Lord Chaitanya's mercy. All of us are here because we occasionally have peak experiences in Krishna consciousness, some very intense kirtan or some other wonderful experience. And that will keep us going because we have to perform austerities to reach the stage of ananda. And one might say, well, I don't have faith. I don't have so much faith in the process. But Lord Chaitanya is giving that faith. He initially gave, when we first walked in the door, we were so ignorant, we didn't know anything. So the Lord simply gave us a lot of mercy. That was my personal experience, and many devotees I've talked to have had that experience. How could one have faith in devotional service initially? You cannot. We're born, especially us born in the West, we don't know anything. Who is Vyasadeva? Prabhupada says we should take information from higher authorities. We should trust the disciplic succession. But in the West, there's no conception of it, because all the people we see as authority figures in the West are fools and rascals. So trusting authority in the West is a major problem, actually. With good reason, because all the authorities are fools. There's Richard Dawkins, he's a professor of zoology at Oxford University. He's a complete atheist. He's a Maha atheist. He just goes around debating. His whole program is to get rid of religion. What was that t-shirt you mentioned that says, yes, religion, we're looking for a cure, like AIDS. AIDS, we're looking for a cure. So they put this t-shirt on, religion, we're looking for the cure. So, and mundane religious systems, which are practiced fanatically, don't help any. Rather, they increase a person's lack of faith. Like if someone practices a mundane religion and goes out violently and kills other people. So that there were crusades in the past. There were actually, in the name of God, people were slaughtering and killing. Or the Inquisition. They would put you on a rack and torture people. Western religious systems tend to be very dogmatic and fanatical, so that just reinforces the conception that knowledge is not to be found from these sources. So it's really accepting religion on authority, or anything on authority in the West, is a major problem. Prabhupada was so empowered. He came to young people and told them to accept authority at a time when it was total revolution against all authority. And he gave a more, everyone had revolted against Christianity, Prabhupada gave a more strict religious system than even Christianity. More rules, more regulations, more restrictions. And he got people to take it and take it enthusiastically. That's because it's real. When the real thing is brought, it acts. So in the beginning, in a country where there's no history or tradition of genuine religion, then the only way to give people faith is that the Lord in the heart gives you faith. When you try to take up this bhakti yoga process, when you walk in the door, the Lord himself gives you some ecstatic feelings, some real feelings of happiness. And that, for me, that changed my life radically, because I had no conception that there was such happiness available. I had absolutely no conception that one could feel totally ecstatic at every moment. For weeks on end, when I joined the Bhakti Movement, I was completely ecstatic until I started thinking I was better than everybody else. Then I lost it. It's by offenses we lose. The Lord gives us our free introductory offer. It's basically how it works. Krishna gives the free introductory offer, and you can actually keep yourself. If you surrender and you keep on surrendering, you don't back off, you don't become absorbed in your previous conceptions, your anarthas and upadis. Rupa Goswami says, Sarv Upadi Vinir Muktam. If we get absorbed in our upadis, we're not ready to dump these upadis, then we lose the mercy. We lose that free introductory offer because we have mundane conceptions. An upadi means I'm thinking I'm this or that. I'm American, I'm Chinese, or I'm a physicist, or I'm a social worker. Anything other than I am pure servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Is a false identification. And with a false identification, we cut ourselves out of the mercy. We disqualify ourselves. Although by nature, the soul is not only qualified, that's the constitutional nature of the soul, is to experience Satchit Ananda. But because of these upadis, we cut ourselves out. We disqualify ourselves. So with this, if you have this, this is not a very difficult concept, actually. It's a very simple concept. If you have this right conception, along aided by the higher taste that Lord Gauranga and Nityananda are freely giving, then you can actually keep yourself always happy in devotional service, and you can make steady advancement. If you're advancing at the rate that Krishna wants you to advance, you'll feel always inspired. That's how Krishna reciprocates in the heart. You feel always enlivened. If you're meditating, analyzing, what is the next step I should take? How I should control, how I should regulate my senses, how I should work for the mission of the spiritual master, how I should serve the Vaishnavas, how I should be very attentive in hearing and chanting, all these things. And these are very simple concepts, actually. It's much harder to get a PhD in physics, I can tell you, than to execute Bhakti Yoga properly. To execute Bhakti Yoga properly is very easy, actually. conceptually easy. It runs against the grain of our false ego. There's where the difficulty comes in, is the false ego. We have a very deep-rooted or deeply ingrained conception of being the enjoyer and the controller. Those two things are major impediments. But again, they can be defeated by keeping your mind fixed on hearing and chanting about Krishna and rendering service to the Vaishnavas. All these anarthas can actually be defeated if you're sincere. It just requires sincerity. Basically, it comes down to that sincerity. So then these things that are being described here, they may seem a little esoteric or beyond the range of our conception. Prabhupada is really, again and again, he's saying tears flowing from the eyes, so much so that he could not see anything. But this is actually one of the standard themes of Vaishnava theology. It's repeated again and again in the Shastra. In the seventh canto, Prahlad Maharaj, seventh canto, chapter 4, in introducing Prahlad Maharaj, is described, he was experiencing so much ecstasy, he was just deeply absorbed. It's like he couldn't see, and the tears were flowing from his eyes. And he was feeling, it says in seventh canto, Prahlad Maharaj was feeling constantly embraced by Lord Nrisimhadeva. He was constantly feeling the loving embrace. Parirambitaha is the term used there in Sanskrit, meaning to embrace, or alingana. He was always feeling the loving embrace of Krishna. Yesterday, Nityananda Pranpuru was saying that Prahlad Maharaj was not saying, why did you take so long to get here? Because Prahlad underwent a series of tortures actually. His father tried to torture and kill him over an extended period of time, repeated trials of great difficulty. But actually, Prahlad Maharaj, by the process of Smaranam, he's actually the Acharya of Smaranam, his capacity to remember Krishna was so unbreakable. It could not be altered under any circumstance, even being thrown in boiling oil. I think we would have some difficulty remaining fixed in Krishna, if we were ever fixed, or if we would have some difficulty being fixed in Krishna consciousness if we're actually thrown into a wok like a pakora to be cooked alive. We don't have that detachment. We identify with our body. But it's inspiring to hear about. These are actual real live examples of persons who have detached themselves from the body. These are Nityasiddha, devotees of the Lord. So Prahlad Maharaj, he's the Acharya for Smaranam. Also in Nectar Devotion, which is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami describes these different processes, and there's an Acharya who exemplifies each of these Angas, the Nava Anga, the nine limbs of Bhakti. So Shravanam, the first of these Angas, this is Maharaj Parikit, he was so expert in hearing. He was, just by hearing properly, he achieved ecstatic love of God. What to speak of self-realization? The devotees get ecstatic love of God. Simply by hearing properly, he just sat down to hear, and he was so fired up about hearing, he didn't even eat. He didn't sleep or eat for 7 days. Didn't want to be distracted. This is real dhritavrata, fixed determination, dhritavrata. Someone is totally fixed. He didn't even waste any time eating or sleeping. Just like Lord Chaitanya said to his associates in the house of Srivas Thakur, what is this sleeping at night? This is useless. And the devotees, they didn't become afraid. We would become a little bit afraid. I mean, how will I can't really maintain the. Again, because we identify with the body. The whole problem is we identify with the body. And we identify with the body because we want to be the enjoyer, and the body presents some facility for enjoyment. In the spiritual world, that's why we left the spiritual world, because in the spiritual world you have a spiritual form which is designed for serving Krishna. It doesn't have material senses. Material senses are given to you when you want to enjoy your personal sense gratification. You don't want to offer things to Krishna. You want to try to enjoy something for yourself. That's how you get a material body. So it's not an accident that we have a material body. There are no loose cannons on Krishna's ship. There's no accidents Everything is precisely and scientifically arranged. If you have a material body now, it's because we desired not to serve Krishna. We desired to gratify our own senses rather than gratify Krishna's senses. So all of these things can be reversed. All of these horrendous, this is the worst mistake a soul can possibly make. You cannot make a greater mistake than to get a material body and a false ego and not want to serve Krishna. But even with this heavy handicap, it can still be reversed. And you might say, oh, that was Prahlad Maharaj. He's Nitya Siddha. Of course he could be thrown in boiling oil and not feel anything. But actually there are examples of book distributors. There's a great book called Servant of the Servant by Tamal Krishnamaraj. It's an amazing book, actually. It's about the Radha Damodar Party, how the Radha Damodar Party started. And there are actually books specifically on Radha Damodar. There's two volumes by Vyasaki specifically on Radha Damodar, and then Servant of the Servant deals a lot with that also. And Vyasaki will even come out with the third volume. These are totally inspiring books. The two Radha Damodar Vilas books and The Servant of the Servant by Tamal Krishnamaraj, they describe the explosion of book distribution fever. It was a fever swept through ISKCON in 1974. On October 23, 1974, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Tamal Krishnamaraj. Tamal Krishnamaraj was Prabhupada's GBC for India. He was basically a very surrendered devotee. He went everywhere. He joined in 1968, and he organized the first Sankirtan. He joined the same day with Vishnujan Maharaj. They were legendary personalities, actually, in ISKCON. Vishnujan Maharaj was such a Gandharva-like singer. Kirtan, he was so addicted to, he was intoxicated by Kirtan. He would just become lost for hours and hours. He could play Murdunga for 8 hours and chant on Harinam. So he was empowered, actually. Prabhupada empowered him. So they joined in March of 1968 together, Vishnujan Maharaj and Tamal Krishnamaraj. And they immediately began. Tamal Krishnamaraj was very highly intelligent. He was very analytical, and he was expert at organizing. And Vishnujan Maharaj was like just absorbed in the nectar of chanting. There are pictures of him. This Radha Damodar Vilas book, Volumes 1 and 2, there are pictures of Vishnujan Maharaj with an angelic look on his face, just absorbed in ecstasy. We might say it's not only Prahlad Maharaj and the great and Bharat Maharaj and these classical Puranic devotees that we hear about. We might think that's for them, but impossible for us. But there are persons born in the United States of America, have Western bodies, and they're actually, because of Prabhupada's mercy, they're actually feeling, they were tasting this nectar that's described by Rupa Goswami. The Ashta Sattvika Vikara is actually available to anyone who surrenders to Prabhupada's mission. That's why I'm giving these examples. When you hear about Bharat Maharaj, you might think this is just theoretical. Or Prahlad Maharaj, it's impossible for us to ever attain. But that's why it's nice to read about the early days of ISKCON. It's extremely inspiring. Whenever you feel a little bit like you've lost your inspiration, just pick up these books like Leelamrita by Satsrup Maharaj. The massive Leelamrita, or these Radha Damodar Vilas books, they're just complete, they'll get you completely off the mental platform. You realize these are devotees like me. They join in America, the cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles and Chicago and New York. They came, we all have our anartas and our difficulties, but it can be overcome. It can actually be overcome. So, they organized Sankirtan in 1968, Tamal Krishnamaraj and Vishnujan Maharaj. And then Prabhupada wanted to start a temple in Seattle. So they raced up to Seattle. They all hopped in a van. Practically the whole San Francisco temple shut down. They just left a couple devotees there. Even Jayananda, he was the temple president. He asked Prabhupada, should I stay? He wasn't sure which was the superior service. This is all in Servant of the Servant, no speculation. Jayananda Prabhu, he asked Srila Prabhupada, what is better? Should I go on being temple? He was running the whole temple. He was driving a taxi cab 12 hours a day, cleaning the kitchen. He would basically sleep only 3 or 4 hours a night. He would clean the whole kitchen. He would work all day because all the other devotees were kind of in the hippie mood. It was 1968 in San Francisco. What can you expect? Most of them were coming down off LSD trips. And so they were getting high on chanting Hare Krishna. That was the most they could do. They were not yet ready to take on any responsibility. They were transferring their tendency to get high from chemical means to Krishna. This was the 1967 was the summer of love in Haight-Ashbury. So the only responsible, and Jayananda was older, he was like 35 years old. He was older. The others were in their late teens. So he was literally providing everything for that temple. He was driving a taxi cab to pay the rent. It was 518 Frederick Street. It was the first temple near the corner of Haight and Ashbury. That's what the very famous Haight-Ashbury was, right near the first temple in San Francisco. The devotees tried to keep Prabhupada in New York. Brahmananda and Gargamuni and Satsvarup and Mukunda, these were the first devotees, and Kirtanananda. They tried, and Umapati. They tried to keep Prabhupada in New York, but Mukunda had a pioneering spirit. Prabhupada said, I want to spread Krishna consciousness all over America. So Mukunda, he was very pioneering. He was very daring. He went all the way out to the West Coast from New York. It started in New York. He went all the way out to the West Coast, and he organized these bands. Mukunda was a musician, and he met up with Shyam Sundar. He was Steve Spearsta, so he later became Shyam Sundar. He knew all the big bands in the San Francisco area, like the Grateful Dead, and he organized them all, and then they arranged a mantra rock festival with Prabhupada singing. So on January 17th, 1967, he flew out from New York City. The devotees were shocked. They never thought it would go beyond the Lower East Side. And then when they knew Prabhupada was serious, Mukunda mailed him some plane tickets. When they knew Prabhupada was serious, they begged him, they tried to keep him there, because Prabhupada's influence was so much, Prabhupada's Krishna consciousness was just so astronomical. It was so beyond anyone's comprehension. Prabhupada is fully as exalted as these Puranic Vaishnavas we hear about, like Prahlad Maharaj and Bharat Maharaj. Prabhupada is every bit as exalted as they are. He falls into that elite category called Nitya Siddha. Nitya means eternal. Siddha means perfect. He was never a conditioned soul. He came here only because Krishna sent him here. That's a very exclusive category. These are the supermen of spirituality. Prahlad Maharaj is also included in that category. He was sent, it's described in the seventh canto, he was sent here to show us how ecstatic it is to practice devotional service. So Prabhupada was actually sent to this planet directly by Lord Chaitanya to spread Krishna consciousness. And devotees in the beginning were so, you couldn't imagine how far away they were from discipline and regulation. The devotees candidly admit these things, like Mukunda Maharaj, who was right there in the beginning, and Satsrup Maharaj, they were right there in the very beginning. Unfortunately, Gargamuni Prabhu is no longer with us, or Umapati, some of the others are no longer with us, but Satsrup and Mukunda have written extensively on it. It's very inspiring. So when they recognized that Prabhupada was heading to the West Coast, they begged him. They said, please, Prabhupada, don't leave us. Without you, we cannot be Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada said, you have to learn to serve in separation. You have to take that next step. The devotees didn't want to take that next step. They were so attached to Prabhupada. They would beg, borrow, and do anything to get his association. So on January 17th, 1967, Prabhupada flew to San Francisco, and they had arranged the Mantra Rock Festival. All the biggest bands were there. It was really a major event, actually. And there were thousands of hippies. They were all intoxicated when Prabhupada came into the Avalon Ballroom in San Francisco to lead the Mantra Rock Dance. And Prabhupada sang, Prabhupada chanted Hare Krishna for 1 hour, and they were all getting absorbed. They began chanting and dancing and jumping, and they were getting the mercy. And next day, hundreds of hippies converged on the San Francisco temple at 518 Frederick Street. They were ready to give up chemical intoxicant to experience the intoxication of love of God, just as Advaita Acharya accused Nityananda of being a drunkard. Advaita, he said, he called Nityananda a drunkard because Nityananda is drunk. He's intoxicated with ecstatic love. For all of the four prohibitions, there are four encouragements. So do not eat meat, but do eat Krishna prasad. Do not become intoxicated, but do become intoxicated on the holy name. Lord Nityananda is described as prema unmata. Actually, the word mata or mut, Sanskrit and English, mad, it's very close. So prema unmata means one who's driven wild, he's become mad with divine ecstasy. That's Nityananda. And he's ready to share it. Lord Nityananda is ready to share it with others. So they raced up to Seattle after San Francisco. Hundreds of people, so many people joined and became attracted to Krishna consciousness by Prabhupada's chanting in the Avalon Ballroom. And then the devotees, they didn't know what to do because hundreds of hippies was a small storefront. This 518 Frederick Street was like 26 Second Avenue in New York. Very small storefront. And Prabhupada said, there were no books yet. They were not even back to God hits. Prabhupada said, just serve prasadam. He told Malati, Yamuna and Malati were there also. They joined in 67. These are great. Malati is still with us. She's a GBC now, actually. These are very exalted persons. We should recognize how exalted they are. They were allowed to personally serve Prabhupada's mission in a huge capacity, making hundreds of devotees. If you make someone else a devotee, you get tremendous mercy. It is described in Madhyalila, chapter 20. Lord Chaitanya is instructing Sanatan Goswami. He says, if you free someone from material illusion, then Krishna will free you. This is the power of preaching. If by your preaching you free one conditioned soul, this is Lord Chaitanya speaking to Sanatan Goswami. If by your preaching you can free one conditioned soul, if you don't offend Vaishnavas, if you keep following the process, if you don't mess up, you're guaranteed to go back to Godhead. That's why this preaching is so powerful. Book distribution, everyone you give a book to, that person, it may have a delayed effect. It may not be in this life, but it's guaranteed. Someone who buys the Bhagavad Gita from you, that person will become a devotee, ultimately. Their mind may obstruct them for a few lifetimes, depending on how deeply conditioned they are, but gradually the mercy will sink in. They will be given a chance to take the next step in devotional service. I have direct experience because I got some mercy myself when I went in 1990, communism fell. So I got on a plane and I went to Russia and I began giving lectures to hundreds of students and dozens of people actually joined. Not because of me, but I was allowed to be the instrument. We never think we're the doer, but I was in the right place at the right time because I was praying. In the 80s, I was struggling in San Diego because it's a very materialistic place. It's hard to make devotees. The hedonism is so rampant in Southern California. So I was suffering in the 80s, and I was praying to the Lord, I really want to do something for your mission. I understand that I have to serve your mission. So somehow in 1990, it was a big surprise. Everyone was struck with wonder. No one could predict the fall of communism, actually, at that time. Now we take it in retrospect in history. It was actually a world-shocking event because when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, communist Russia was a major threat. We used to have the sirens would go off in the 50s when I was going to school. There would be big air raid sirens and all the kids would jump under their desks. You'd get under your desk. No one can understand that it was really serious thing in the 50s and 60s. So I just thought this was how part of life. It would go on forever, 70s and 80s. No one knew that the Hare Krishna movement was from within, was conquering. It was subversion. That one Bhagavad Gita, I told the story in last class of how Shamsundar smuggled in a Bhagavad Gita. Malati put a picture of Lord Jagannath in. So when the commissar, because they took your luggage apart piece by piece. You couldn't get anything in bigger than a square centimeter in size. Every postage stamp was put under a microscope. They were so afraid. When Prabhupada came, Prabhupada's only visit in June of 1971, to Russia, to Moscow. And his Prabhupada's one traveling companion was Shyam Sundar, and Shyam Sundar's wife was Malati. And Malati, she gets so much mercy from her service. She snuck a picture of Lord Jagannath into the middle of the Bhagavad Gita as it is. It was Shyam Sundar's personal copy of Bhagavad Gita. So when the commissar flipped open, he saw the picture fell out, and it looked just like some doll. In his conception, Lord Jagannath was just some doll, some child's toy. He couldn't even recognize, he didn't even see it as a religious figure, because the communists were so anti-religious. So that the commissar, when the picture of Lord Jagannath popped out of the Bhagavad Gita, then the commissar thought, oh, these are just like kiddie stories. So he said, okay, this is okay. You can take this in. And that one Bhagavad Gita, Shyam Sundar met one, and when Shyam Sundar was out walking around trying to get vegetables for Prabhupada, they couldn't even get, the only thing that was available was vodka, meat, potatoes. That's about all you could get in Russia in those days. People would wait in long lines to get potatoes, meat, and vodka. So Prabhupada sent Shyam Sundar out all over the city. He spent hours walking around in Moscow. And he was detained because he was in a dhoti with shaved head and tilak. So the KGB would, occasionally he would be accosted. They would pin his arms behind his back and say, where are your document? Where's your document? So finally, after so many difficulties, we should realize how it is not easy to spread Krishna consciousness. Devotees have to undergo a lot of difficulties, but the rewards are huge. Finally, Shyam Sundar found this one Anatoly, one young Russian, and brought him back to Prabhupada's apartment. Prabhupada went there. Ostensibly, the way he got into the country was he had corresponded with this Professor Kotovsky. And he was going to give lectures, so he went to meet up with Kotovsky, and Kotovsky, it turned out, was just an agent of the communist government just trying to get information out of Prabhupada. He said, we're not going to let you give any lectures. When Prabhupada finally came, Kotovsky said, you cannot give any lectures in this country. He was actually, he tried to get as much out of Prabhupada information about India and the Hare Krishna movement and everything else. He was like all communist kind of set up. So he probably sort of looked externally. A materialist will say Prabhupada's going to Russia was a failure. He could not introduce Krishna consciousness. But Krishna is the supreme knower of everything. And Prabhupada had an intense desire to spread Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada's desire to spread Krishna consciousness and Shyam Sundar's adventurous, enterprising mood, the combination of this resulted in Shyam Sundar meeting one young Russian, Anatoly, and this Anatoly was very interested in spiritual life. The communists didn't let you hear anything from outside of the country. So he came there, and he knew a little bit of English, fortunately. And for 4 or 5 days, Prabhupada had 1 week in Russia, so for the next 4 or 5 days, just constantly, Prabhupada was training him up. It was like an intense course. You could imagine, because after Prabhupada left, it was years before he had association of any other devotees. Prabhupada taught him everything, how to offer food, what can be eaten, what can be offered to Krishna, what cannot be offered. He had to teach him everything, basically. And that one Bhagavad Gita, which by Malati's mercy, by her intelligence, Supersoul told her to put a picture of Jagannath into, because of that Bhagavad Gita got into the country. That was like the subversion, that was like the injection of poison, Prabhupada said, the Hare Krishna movement. Has been injected to destroy the communist program. So it spread like wildfire. People hand copied because typewriters were under government control. Even a typewriter was registered. Every time you bought a toothbrush, you had to fill out 5 forms. But because of the repressive, this is actually Lord Chaitanya's trick. All these souls, if they had been as hedonistic as the West, it would not have spread. That which is made taboo or held undercover becomes very attractive. We all see from the transcendental perspective, we see the hand of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Shyam Sundar told me this. He was actually explained this whole pastime. He told me personally. Because there was a reunion in Russia. I came in the 90s because I didn't have the Krishna conscious to do all the risks that it took in the early days, so I came when it was easy later on. And there was a reunion. Shyam Sundar was actually giving a lecture, and it was a big reunion, and everyone was in ecstasy because he was telling the whole story of how the first Bhagavad Gita was smuggled into communist Russia. But even I came a little later, still I was, because of my scientific training, I was giving lectures. And dozens of people joined not because of my lecture, but I was the instrument. So my point is when you make someone a devotee, you get the mercy. I felt my Krishna consciousness underwent a radical transformation. When dozens of people joined because of lectures that I gave, I mean because of Lord Chaitanya, I was the instrument, but I was allowed to be the instrument. My chanting became so much deeper. My attraction for hearing and chanting the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya became so deep and ecstatic in the early 90s because I was just in the right place at the right time and dozens of people joined. And not only in Russia, but I went to Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, Poland. All of these places were ripe for Krishna consciousness. You'd just stand on the street. People would come up to me and ask, what is that book? What do you have there? You just go out in a street corner right after communism fell. And I would speak in English. And everyone was very attractive. As soon as you start speaking English, a crowd of people were around me. Any fool could distribute hundreds of Gitas in a day. It was so easy compared to in the 80s, I struggled to distribute one book, one Bhagavad Gita. If I could distribute one Bhagavad Gita a day in San Diego, I was feeling ecstasy. Because I'm not empowered like RVC distributors. Anyone who could distribute a lot of books in America, they're actually very greatly empowered souls. Madhukari Prabhu, on Warp Tour, one day he did 212 soft Gitas, he told me. And Krishna Kumar, a new devotee in San Diego, he did 400 SSRs in one day on Warp Tour. So, if they had gone to Russia, they would have done 10,000 books in one day. But the point I'm actually making is, how are we going to reach, we read these descriptions of ecstatic love, and it seems like so esoteric, so way beyond, but actually from my own experience, if you make someone else, if you go out of your way and try to make someone else a devotee, Lord Chaitanya gives you the mercy, it's guaranteed. And Prabhupada stated that in Madhyala chapter 20, in Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatan Goswami, in one purport, Prabhupada says directly, if you make someone else a devotee, and you don't screw up, you don't offend Vaishnavas the rest of your course of devotion, you don't make heavy aparads or fall down. If you just stay in the movement and you make someone else a devotee, you're sure to go back to Godhead. So this is our goal. This is when a businessman hears that something of value can be got for a tenth of the price, he immediately drops everything and runs to get that product, like when a special arrangement is made. So we are looking for ecstatic love. This is our goal. We want to get love of God. So when you hear that Lord Chaitanya is giving it easily, it's like so much easier than previous ages. And you can read what Bharat Maharaj, he did tremendous austerities. He went to the forest. He was eating fruits and roots. No sabji, no halva, no pakoras. Fruits and roots. And he didn't complain. You have to do, and for most people, it's described in Satya, you got to do that for thousands of years. It was so rigorous, it was so austere, like sometimes we think Krishna conscious practice that we're doing now is very difficult, very austere. Getting up for Mangal Arati, this is very austere. Or I have to go every day to Guru Puja, I have to chant 16 rounds, this is very austere. I have to go out on book distribution. No, this is too much, this is too difficult. There is no faster or easier process of of God realization, of getting ecstatic love of God. There has never been on this earth planet a process as easy and efficacious as the process given by Gauranga and Nityananda. And Lord Chaitanya is the authorized distributor of Gaur and Nitai's mercy. Prabhupada is the authorized distributor, the authorized agent. He's so empowered. So this is, when we hear these descriptions, we shouldn't relegate them to the realm of the esoterica. We shouldn't relegate them to the realm of the unachievable. We should understand that it can actually be achieved. And I have personal experience, when you go out of your way to make someone else a devotee, then you definitely get the mercy. This is definitely the way to do it. And it's, Prabhupada says it again and again. It's all over the place in Shastras. So many places. I mentioned this one, Majjhalila chapter 20. Another example is Majjhalila chapter 7, when Lord Chaitanya cured the leper Brahmin Vasudev. Lord Chaitanya embraced him and he had a golden body. His body was reformed instantly by Lord Chaitanya's magical power. Usually Lord Chaitanya didn't do magical things. Only a few occasions. Jesus is celebrated for his performance of miracles and other Vaishnavas. Miracles can be performed, but Gaudiya Vaishnavas don't usually do that because it detracts. You get cheap followers, like Satya Sai Baba, you know, he produces ashes. So you get a bunch of millions of cheap followers, but no love of God. So Vaishnavas, they don't usually do this kind of thing, but Lord Chaitanya, occasionally he did it. In this case, when this leper Brahmin, there was a Brahmin, he was a Vaishnav. He was actually a great Vaishnav, and he had leprosy somehow or other. And he didn't complain about it. A pure devotee never complains. He accepted his position in life. He wasn't unhappy. He was unhappy when he missed seeing Lord Chaitanya. He fell on the ground and was crying. That's something to cry about. By a few minutes he missed. He came to the house of the Kurma Brahmin and Lord Chaitanya had just left. If you imagine missing Lord Chaitanya after 8.6 billion years of wandering in this universe. The Lord only come once in a day, Brahman. The night there's nothing. There's 4.3 billion in the day and 4.3 billion in the night. So it's once every 8.6 billion years. That's something to scream and cry about. Missing Lord Chaitanya. So he was crying and then Lord Chaitanya returned and embraced him. And he had, actually his body was full of worms, it says in Majjhalila chapter 7. He had worms in his, and he was so kind-hearted, whenever a worm fell out, he put it back in the same place thinking, at least my body can provide some value. It has some value to sustain a few living entities. He was a pure devotee, actually. No one can be so exalted. He was really detached. This is not my speculation. It says directly, when a worm fell out, he would put it back in the same place. It's Majjhalila chapter 7. The beginning of Lord Chaitanya's tour of South India. So he accepted his lot. This is very instructive for us also. We shouldn't complain if we bruise our finger a little bit. Oh, why did Krishna make me bruise my finger? Or why did I meet that nasty person on Sankirtan? He insulted me severely, maybe even shoved me a few feet back and it was a traumatic experience, and I'm never going on book distribution again. But here, the exalted pure devotees, Tate Nukamvam Sushamikshamano, it's actually stated, 10th canto, chapter 14, Lord Brahma directly says that we're really supposed to think like this, even though it may be difficult. We're actually supposed to think that we deserve worse suffering and that we go on offering obeisance. Anyone who goes on offering respectful obeisances to the Lord, for him, going back to Godhead is guaranteed. If you can accept your previous, whatever happens bad to you, so that you feel that I deserve it, this is my karma, so I actually deserve it. So the exemplar, the grand exemplar of this consciousness was this leper Brahmin, Vasudev. No one else. It's hard to even imagine imitating. He was happily going on with his program of reinstating the worms back in their rightful position to get whatever the useless body could provide for them. And then Lord Chaitanya, he came and he embraced him. And this Vasudev was not asking for any benediction from the Lord. He just wanted to glorify the Lord and meet the Lord. But the Lord, because he was satisfied, when the Lord is satisfied with our sincere endeavor, he will do some miracle in your life. Maybe he won't give you a golden body on the spot, but he'll internally, like lust will go away. That's a miraculous. During the course of my trying to become a devotee, whenever you get this like freedom from lust and greed, and you just feel totally ecstatic and satisfied, that's a miraculous thing actually, to no longer be pushed by the illusory energy. That's a miracle actually. For a Westerner to not be pushed around by lust and greed, that's as miraculous as getting a golden body. So So all of these things await us. You just have to, the point is you have to go on doing the regulated program in devotional service. This is, it is actually the fastest process, the mercy of Gaur Nityananda. The regulated sadhana and temple services are required, and also going out. Try to go out every week, at least a few hours every week, if not more. Now the summer is coming. In the winter you have some excuse. Now if you don't go on Bhuktivedanta now, you're really missing out. You should kick yourself when December rolls around and it's so cold. Now it's easy to go out. And also the people who are cooped up inside in these hellish northern climates. I'm from Southern Cal. It's always warm, 70 degrees, even in the winter. But in these, now this is actually better. Why did I come? It gets better for preaching here, actually. People are better. They're more receptive for the preaching. Now they've been cooped up there and they spring out. They're ready for the good weather. So now is the time to go out. The devotees are ready with Bhukti Shishan Harinam. We should go out every day. Actually, as many devotees as possible should go out every day on Bhukti Shishan and Harinam. And I will be joining soon. I just have to finish my book. So this, the mercy is, it's guaranteed mercy. And it's something you can actually feel. You can really experience this. This mercy of trying to give. When you try to give, you go out of your way to help someone else become Krishna conscious, you're sure to get the mercy yourself. So thank you very much.
I was wanting to know, you were mentioning that if we help to make someone a devotee, then guaranteed back home, back to Godhead, if. And that big if is, that seemed like a pretty big if. And I'm thinking historically and also personally. Historically, we see many empowered personalities making like hundreds and hundreds of devotees, and then somehow other. And then also, we've also been fortunate enough to be instrumental in helping few living entities get a foothold in devotional service. But sometimes it seems like the consciousness isn't going forward. So I was wanting to know, what would be the result, well, if you can explain about that point, and also, what would be the result of someone who has contributed to other living entities taking Christian consciousness, even hundreds of living entities, but they themselves somehow they don't make it because of...
Bhakti Vikash Maharaj wrote a beautiful article in Back to Godhead magazine in the 90s about Buddhimanta Prabhu. He joined in San Francisco. San Francisco is a special place in the beginning. Very special, like Malati joined, Yamuna Devi, the one who sings. She's immortalized for thousands of years. Her voice will be heard every time the deity curtain. She left her body recently, 1 year ago, Yamuna Devi, the disciple of Prabhupada. It was a very special time in the early days. So this one devotee named Buddhimanta, he began big book distribution. It's in Lilamrita. He traded the Bhagavad Gita for gas at a gas station. There's a chapter in Lilamrita called Distribute Books, Distribute Books, Distribute Books, where Prabhupada was begging the devotees, please go out and distribute. No one knew how to distribute big books. Even Jayananda, he tried before Buddha. He didn't know how to do it. He had teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Jayananda gave $5,000, his life savings, which today would be worth $50,000 by inflation. $50,000. They printed up Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It was the first big book available, even before Bhagavad Gita. So it was shipped to San Francisco and New York, and it sat there. Devotees didn't, what are we going to do with these books? The BTGs existed, and it was a struggle just to sell a few BTGs. And so devotees, they tried. They tried putting books on consignment. They went all over the place. It was Buddhimanta. He actually began book distribution in San Francisco, and he thought, what the heck, let me just try. So they went to a gas station, they filled up the car, and they had no money, so they tried to convince, this is ISKCON early days. It was wonderful. It was like buccaneers, like spiritual buccaneers, spiritual marauders for Lord Nityananda. Jayananda even stole a pair of blue jeans, and when he was caught, the judge, and they took him to court, and Jayananda said, because I don't want to spend the money of my spiritual master, we have a spiritual, he was so pure-hearted, the judge said, I cannot convict this man, but he has to pay the $7 for the pair of pants, and the policeman who brought him in said, I'll pay the $7. See, just the pure-heartedness, that the innocence and purity, that's what, if you read, that's why I love reading about these early ISKCON days. The innocence and purity is so enchanting. These devotees would do anything to please Prabhupada. I wish I could develop. We really have to meditate on this. This is, and ISKCON spread rapidly then and will spread again rapidly if we, the mood of innocence, purity, and loving dealings between Vaishnavas. If the place is all attractive when people come in because they're suffering out there, there's no doubt about it. When they come in here and see real loving relationships between Vaishnavas and purity and simplicity and humility, everyone will be attracted, because even demonic persons will be attracted. Everyone is looking for this. Everyone. I was a demonic person. I was a scientist. I was studying physics. But my heart was captivated. It's actually because everyone is suffering and they need real loving dealing. So Buddhimanta, innocently he just said, well, I have this Bhagavad Gita, and he began saying, this is a beautiful book. It shows how to develop love of God. And he preached a little bit, and they said, and he said, will you please take it for gas, in exchange for the gas? And they took it. And he was so excited, he went home and told all the devotees, and the next day he went out and did 5 books. It was actually Krishna books they had in stock at the time. Sorry, it was a Krishna book, not a Bhagavad Gita. My mistake. It's in Lilamrita, the chapter, distributed books. So then each of them started doing 5 and 10, and they were pretty soon they were doing 70 Krishna books per day. Keshava was the temple president. So he wrote to Prabhupada and told, and Prabhupada said, I'm coming to your temple. When I come, they defeated LA even. LA was bigger. Los Angeles was a bigger temple. But they were doing more. So Prabhupada said, when I come back, he was in India. He was 1971. So Prabhupada said, when I come back, I'm staying in your temple because you're doing so many Krishna books. You're enlivening me so much. And Buddhimanta, then he went around training other temples. He actually began training others, which pleased Prabhupada tremendously. And then he went to Australia. There's a great book by Kurma called The Great Transcendental Adventure. This book is really amazing. It's like Radha Dharmada Vilas, but in Australia. Again, the mood of utter simplicity and just innocence and just wanting to please Prabhupada. Innocently going out on the streets. And they were harassed severely by the police. In America, at least, we have some religious laws of religious freedom in the Constitution of the United States. But in Australia, there were no such. The devotees were regularly thrown in jail. This is a great book. It's called The Great Transcendental Adventure by Kurma Prabhu. He's like Satsrupa Maharaj. He's very detached. In the book, he says, and Kurma did this, like Satsrupa also says, and Satsrupa said this. He's very detached and non. It doesn't have a big false ego. He's a very great soul, this Kurma. He joined as a brahmachari in 1971 there in Australia, and he's been constantly serving Krishna for more than 40 years. So in that book, he describes how when Buddhimanta came, no one knew how to distribute books, so Buddhimanta came to Australia. He turned the place upside down. Within a couple of months, Australia was beating everybody. They were number one. Sydney and Melbourne were number one for a few months because Buddhimanta trained them up. So this is a BTG article by Bhakti Vikash Maharaj on Buddhimanta. So after Prabhupada left, Buddhimanta fell away from Krishna consciousness. He couldn't practice strictly. He couldn't follow the four regular principles. So he was doing, he didn't stay in ISKCON, and he was breaking regular principles. But he got cancer and he went to Vrindavan. And as he was giving up his body in Sri Vrindavan Dham, he began practicing again. He began chanting. Because he had pleased Prabhupada so much, Lord Chaitanya gave him the mercy and he went back to Godhead. Bhakti Vikash Maharaj says there are certain symptoms, like magical, like a Brahmin walks by at a certain moment, or like you can see a rainbow in the sky. I forget all the details given in this BTG article. But to answer your question, according to Bhakti Vikash Maharaj, who is a very fixed up, very glorious sannyasi and spiritual master in our movement, Bhakti Vikash Maharaj said he actually went back to Godhead. All the signs of his going back to Godhead. And he had even fallen down. He was not practicing Krishna for many years after Prabhupada left. Many devotees couldn't maintain their Krishna consciousness after Prabhupada left. Without Prabhupada's personal inspiration, most of the devotees actually left Krishna consciousness, left ISKCON. So Your question is excellent. What happens if you and he fell down completely. He was no longer chanting. He was no longer following the four regular principles. But he went back to Godhead because he worked so hard. He during the time he was distributed from 1971 till after 1977. So for at least 6 years of tremendous, he did a lot of book distribution and he did it very sincerely. And he inspired other devotees. He trained other devotees. And he made many devotees. In that great Transcendental Adventure book by Kurma, many people joined, dozens of people joined because of Buddhimanta. They got a book from him. So Lord Chaitanya took him back to Godhead. And other cases, Hayagriva Prabhu. this is told in a lecture by Radhanath Maharaj. Hayagriva Prabhu did so much service for Prabhupada, editing his books in the beginning. Prabhupada loved Hayagriva, but after Prabhupada left, Hayagriva could not maintain the regular principles. He was breaking regular principles. And again, he went to Vrindavan, and he got cancer. He went to Vrindavan, and he took up Krishna consciousness very sincerely in his last few months of his life, and became very, he was feeling ecstasy, it's described. He was chanting and feeling Prabhupada's mercy. And feeling ecstasy. So that's another person, another example. So the real point, because you're raising the point, well, maybe it's hopeless. Maybe I'm so fallen, even if I do something nice, maybe I make someone a devotee, but I can't make it for the long run. I won't make it my whole life. So your question was extremely good, because we might be thinking, I might not make it for my whole life, but these two examples, and there are others, they show that if you just, don't worry about the future, just go full out, full bore now, go as hard, intensely as you can. And the result is, even if, suppose you didn't even go back, you're certain to get an exalted position, much higher than if you had never practiced bhakti yoga. Narada Muni says in the first canto, there's a famous verse. Do you know the Sanskrit of that verse? He says that even, what does a karmi gain if he does all of his... That's it. Tyaktiva means to give up. Tyaktiva svadharma. If you give up, you join the Hare Krishna movement out of sentimentality, Prabhupada says there in the purport to that beautiful verse. Somehow or other you join the Hare Krishna movement, and later you fall away. What did you lose? And what does a karmi gain? If a karmi does all his duties perfectly, what does he gain? Nothing. He loses everything. I mean, actually, a vikarmi. A real karmi, he could gain Swargaloka. But there are no real karmis in America, you can be sure. Maybe in India, a few. So a vikarmi, he has to go to the hellish planets or take an animal body. But if he had just done a little bit of Krishna consciousness, just even a little bit, the gain is tremendous. Svalpa up, what is that? Svalpa up, jasticha. Dharmasya. Chayate maha. The greatest bhayat, the greatest fear is that you lose the human form of life. So Krishna and Bhagavad Gita is confirming this. You don't lose anything. So your point, your question is extremely good. Someone might say, well, there's no hope for me. I don't even bother trying to make a few devotees because I can't even make it in the long run. Because I made the point in the class, I was saying, if you make someone a devotee and you hang on, you stay in Krishna consciousness, you follow the four regs your whole life and stay in Krishna consciousness, then you go back to Godhead, guaranteed. But there's a good chance if you work hard, you'll go back to Godhead, even if you fall down later on. And even if you don't go back to Godhead, you still get a destination infinitely superior to any destination that you would have otherwise achieved. So it's simply all gain, everything positive, all possible gain that you could possibly imagine in Krishna consciousness.
Hare Krishna. You mentioned in your lecture in the beginning that atheists, you know, not liking religion, and the fanatic religions make it worse. Like, in the name of God, there's so much killing going on. So can someone say that about the Bhagavad Gita? In the name of God, Krishna has Arjuna killing so many people.
There is a fundamental difference that Duryodhana, when Duryodhana was born in Mahabharata, he was braying like an ass. And Vidura said, kill this child immediately. Even though it's unheard of to kill a child. Bhishma and Vidura, they were like, oh my God, this is like first they were like shocked. It was like they wanted to run away. What do we do with this first child of Dhritarashtra? He's braying like an ass. Duryodhana was it's said to be, he was envy personified. He was born in the Kuru dynasty to destroy the family. So when we see things in right perspective, Maharaj Yudhisthira was so humble, he was such a pure devotee and had all good qualities. He didn't even want to fight. He was happy with having some insignificant position. But Krishna wanted, it was really if a terrorist was taking over the whole country. That's modern day terms. Like Duryodhana was like a terrorist. So the situation there was, it was a righteous war directly ordained by Krishna. But the deeper point of the Bhagavad Gita is that if you act for Krishna's pleasure, you achieve the highest stage of happiness and go back to Godhead. You should fight simply because I desire it. That's really the deepest point, Krishna saying. Simply surrender, sarva dharma prajita. The real point is that by satisfying Krishna, you achieve the highest destination. One should be ready to do anything to satisfy Krishna. That's the deeper point. And along the way, the Bhagavad Gita makes so many other points. Like Arjuna was a fighter. He wanted to try to be a Brahmin. And Krishna says, you achieve perfection by performing your particular duty, not by trying to adopt some other dharma. You're a kshatriya, so that's your dharma. So that's another. The Bhagavad Gita is full of these very instructive points. So anyone who says that it's just another war, another bloody religious war, they need to study the Gita very carefully.
Krishna, thank you for your class. This is a question about measuring one's progress and to stay enthusiastic. Because of the fruit of tendency, sometimes, like, you know, these kind of symptoms obviously take a long while, maybe even several lifetimes. But even in our own lives, you know, we're getting the mercy, we're making advancement. But sometimes because of our, like, unenthusiastic nature, then if some difficulty comes, then we forget to see all the advancement we've already made. And we just think, oh, what is the use? You know, like, I haven't made any advancement. So then how do we stay steady, like, on a daily basis measuring our progress so that when some difficulty does come, we can say, oh, you know, I've made some progress. This is a new challenge.
Progress is always measured by reduction of material desires and attraction for rendering devotional service. And they go opposite. As when material desires are up, then our desire to serve Krishna is down. It's like a seesaw. So when material desires are down, our attraction for serving Krishna is up. This is a very quantitative thing. Are we attracted to lust and greed? I mean, you know immediately. You don't have to ask. This is how you measure your progress. All right. You're going out on book decision. You're in it. It's a great challenge. You know, you're confronting the sense objects. So how much is your mind being pulled by lust? If you're not being pulled very much, that's a very good sign. You're rightly situated. Krishna is giving you the mercy. If you're not attracted, especially because we, in classical Varnashram system, you were trained in Gurukul about controlling your senses, but we Americans went through teenage with unrestricted sense, so we're really disqualified. So all the sense objects that you used to be attached to are right there on Clark Avenue, on Belmont or whatever street, they're right there, all the things that you used to be attached to. So you can judge how much you're advancing. Are you still looking at those sense objects? Do you feel, are the eyes being drawn to the sense objects? Or are you now saying, no, my eyes saw the beautiful forms of Kishore Kishori, then I keep them in my heart as I go on book decision, so I'm not feeling the pull. There may be a little tug, but you can bring it back, you know. So that means you're advancing nicely, you're getting the mercy. Along with that comes a higher taste for chanting and reading. The pastimes of the Lord become attractive. They stay in your mind. As you advance, like the pastimes of Krishna book, they should stay in your mind and they should become really inspirational. Like Krishna's washing the feet of Sudama Vipra. I mean, that is a far out thing, actually. Krishna's washing the feet of his devotee and putting the water on his head. That's a whole meditation. You can just like be feeling that, the happiness, that how wonderfully Krishna reciprocates with his devotee. So the Krishna book, pastimes of Krishna book and other pastimes of the Lord become more attractive to your heart. That's what takes over your consciousness, as opposed to the lusty desires and the and the unbridled greed for material success, that it's, so really your question is it's obvious if you're making advancement or not. If you'd have to be totally unconscious to not notice, because this is what we're trying to do. This, our whole goal is, how are we going to switch our allegiance? We've been pure devotees of Maya for many lifetimes. Whatever Maya said, give me this. Yes, yes, master, yes, anything. Whatever you desire, full-on sense gratification. The tongue says, give me a chocolate ice cream. Yes, master, whatever you want. Give me a hamburger, yes. Give me pizza. I'm already eating like a pig. No, give me more. I want more. And so you're forced, you see, actually a conditioned soul is forced to serve the senses. You have no choice. It's not an option. So we our whole program is to switch our allegiance. We have been pure devotees of Maya for many lifetimes. We're really good at it. We're expert devotees of Maya. We're pure devotees of Maya. So we want to switch over. So how to not notice this, you must notice, because we're becoming detached from Maya and attached to Krishna. We're switching our allegiance. How can we not notice? This is our whole, we're praying and begging, and from the deities we get the greeting, please take away these lusty desires so I can become some kind of Vaishnav. So that we, how we cannot notice? That's our whole, that's our life and soul. It's our whole, our everything in our life is how to advance in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki.